Chapter 6. What to do for others after they die. Seeing into darkness is clarity. Knowing how to yield is strength. Use your own light and return to the source of light. This is called practicing eternity. Lao Tzu. The View. People often feel helpless after someone has died, thinking there is nothing they can do to help. But this is actually the time when we can do the most, and when our help is needed the most. Unless the dead person is prepared, they're probably stumbling through bewildering terrain, buffeted by the storms of karma, facing the projections of their own mind, and feeling confused, alone, and afraid. The Bardo texts don't offer much consolation for those unprepared. Perhaps this is to inspire us to become prepared, or to instill the wholesome fear of karma. Most people after death are as vulnerable as they were after birth. They need the same level of help. This is when those left behind should take advantage of the full force of Buddhist post-death practices. As we have seen, when the mind is no longer restricted by the body, it becomes much clearer. It also possesses temporary psychic powers, including the powers of clairvoyance and clairaudience. Gyōngsar Kyentse Rinpoche says, Bardo beings have very refined minds, so the practice you do in the Bardo will be much more beneficial, more powerful. These powers can be used to benefit the Bardo being. We can invite it into our mind space and then guide it. When the mind is anchored by the body during life, it can be hard to get things moving. Spiritual progress takes time, but when the mind is set free in the Bardo, rapid spiritual progress is possible. It's like taking a huge tree stump, which even a dozen people can't budge on land, and putting it in water. In this fluid new environment, it's easy to move and guide. The Tibetan Book of the Dead talks about why we should help and the abilities of the dead person to respond. The book asserts that it is impossible not to be liberated by these instructions. This is because, first, consciousness in the intermediate state is endowed with an, albeit corrupt, supernormal cognitive ability. Therefore, whatever one says to the deceased is heard by the deceased. Second, even if the deceased was deaf or blind while in the human world, now, in the intermediate state, all the sensory faculties will be complete and therefore whatever is said will be apprehended. Third, since the deceased is continually being overwhelmed by fear and terror, there is an undistracted concentration on what to do. Therefore, what is said will be listened to. Fourth, since the consciousness has no physical support, it is easy to guide and it can penetrate to the essence of whatever is focused upon. Additionally, since the power of retention is now many times clearer, even the mentally weak will have, in the intermediate state, a lucid awareness, by virtue of their past actions. Hence, they will have the gift of knowing how to meditate on that which is taught, and the gift to assimilate such points of instruction. These are the reasons why the performance of rituals on behalf of the dead is beneficial. This is all possible because karma is temporarily suspended. If we're prepared or properly guided, we can shape our mind into any imaginable form. This is why the Bardo of Becoming is also called the Bardo of Possibility or Opportunity. As one close to the deceased, we can effectively guide the consciousness into this new form. Their next life can be shaped by what we do now. The fluidity of the mental body is both a blessing and a curse. It's a curse in that the Bardo being is highly unstable. With nothing to secure it, the mental body flickers about like a candle flame in the breeze. And without a physical body, the Bardo being can't retain new information as well. This is why instructions have to be continuously repeated. But the blessing is that this fluidity allows those left behind to guide and even forcefully move the Bardo being in the direction of a good rebirth. We can direct the karmic gusts to blow in the right direction. This is especially true for those who have the strongest karmic connection to the dead person. The Bardo being will be naturally drawn to you, so you are in a good position to help. Because of the temporary psychic powers, Bardo beings can see and hear you when you call out to them. They can also read your mind. If you're holding them with loving thoughts, that will settle their mind. Positive states of mind are contagious and can become states of reality for them, delivering them into the higher realms. Conversely, if you're harboring hurtful thoughts, that can unsettle the bardo being and create negative states of mind. This could deliver them into lower realms. Here is an inner application of the power of holding environments discussed earlier. The first way to help them, therefore, is to hold them in your heart with love. Whenever you think of them, automatically add the mantra, Om Mani Padme Hum, which frames your memories with meditation. In the bardo of dying, we want to create the feeling of a warm physical hug. In the bardo of becoming, we want to sustain that hug spiritually. Some teachers say that we should try not to cry, but rather rejoice in a life well lived. If we can do this without placing undue pressure on ourselves, that can help the dying person let go. But the loss of a loved one is perhaps the most painful experience in life. The added pressure of conducting the perfect post-death emotional response can further add to our heartbreak. We should try to place their needs ahead of our own, but we should also remember that if we don't care for ourselves, we won't be able to care for them. Death is not an emergency. There's no need to rush and call anybody official. When my father passed on a Monday evening, I didn't contact hospice until the following morning. I didn't call the funeral home to pick up the body till Tuesday afternoon. That gave me 18 hours to practice with him. It also allowed family and friends to be with him in an intimate setting. Even though he died without pain, his breathing had been labored, which was hard for a family to witness. Seeing him lying in repose put them at ease, softening the difficult memories of his final hours. Every family member who expressed doubts about keeping the body for so long said that sitting with him after he died changed their view. They felt grateful for the opportunity to be with him. When to help. It's especially important to help those who have passed during the first 3.5 weeks after death. This is when the bardo being is still in the shape of a mental body similar to its previous physical body and is lingering around familiar people and places. Due to habitual patterns, we continue to see ourselves the way we were. Consciousness comes into the bardo's wearing its old habits, which literally shape the mental body. As we progress through the bardo, some teachers say the mental body slowly morphs into the shape of the body it will fully become in the next life. Old habitual patterns fade and new ones take shape. Therefore, the second 3.5 weeks, or the second half of the bardo experience, if the bardo being doesn't stay for the full 7 weeks, is when the bardo being turns toward its next life. Karma takes control and locks the being into its next incarnation. We should concentrate our efforts to help the deceased every week on the day that they died. In other words, on the 7th, 14th, and 21st days after death. This is because the dying experience is repeated every 7 days. It's not a repeat of the dying process, since the physical body is already gone and the dissolutions cannot take place. Kalu Rinpoche explains. At the end of each week, there is the trauma of realizing that we are dead, and our minds plunge into another state of unconsciousness like the one immediately after death, but not quite as intense. After each of these very short periods of unconsciousness, consciousness returns, and once more the mandalas of the deities present themselves, but now in a fragmentary and fleeting way. The successive opportunities afforded by these appearances are not as great as at the first stage, but the possibility for liberation does recur throughout the after-death experience. These are the days to focus on the rituals described next. Jomgun Kongtrul writes, if the being is unable to begin the birth process within those first 7 days, it undergoes a minor death, which is like fainting for a short time, and again is born in the intermediate state. It may then begin the birth process within the next 7-day period. If even within that period it still does not meet with the number of factors necessary for taking birth, it will inevitably begin the process of taking birth within 49 days from the time of death. For example, if a person died on Sunday before noon, the first focus day would be on the next Saturday. If they died after noon, it would fall on the next Sunday. The fourth week after death is considered particularly important because many beings don't stay in the bardo longer than 4 weeks. 49 days is generally the longest one spends in the bardo, so rituals are often done then. 1 year after death is another potent time to reach out. In addition to the time of death, there's also a connection to the place of death. This is especially true if the death was traumatic. It's best if we can do our practices at that location and on these special times. But if we can't, don't worry about missing the ideal situation. The ideal situation is our heartfelt motivation to help. While these are special times to help, it's never too late. Space and time do not limit the power of compassion and the force of merit. Even after the bardo being has been reborn, merit dedicated to them still helps. Finally, your efforts to help the dead, especially if you have a strong karmic connection, can be as effective as that of a spiritual master. It's not just the spiritually elite that can benefit the dead. Until the heart center cools, or some blood comes out of the mouth or nose, signaling that the red bindu has ascended and released the consciousness, don't touch the lower parts of the body. Wait until the dying process is complete so that consciousness isn't directed out of a lower exit. Direct your attention and contact to the top of the head. Remember that it takes about 20 minutes for the inner dissolution to occur. If the dead person is an organ donor, the generosity of offering their body supersedes these instructions. Organ harvesting should begin immediately. For a few days after death, don't disturb any of the dead person's possessions. Their consciousness may be attracted to these items, and messing with their things could upset them. Although consciousness has left the body still remains the main karmic link to this past life. The bardo being often hovers around it. Treat the body with reverence and respect. Bathe it, bless it, and tend to it with care. The following sections offer rituals and meditations that benefit the dead. These practices also benefit those left behind. They help us say goodbye and give us the feeling that we're doing something to help. The Tibetan tradition is fabulously rich in things we can do. Some of these rituals are esoteric, even for students of Tibetan Buddhism. But they have been practiced for hundreds of years by the most realized beings on this planet. These are not empty rituals for social purposes. These are heart practices of a wisdom tradition designed to benefit those in need. We would do well to surrender to this wisdom and trust its methods. We will start with the simple practices and then progress into more esoteric methods. The power of merit. One of the most effective things we can do to help the dead is to gather and dedicate merit to them. Merit is the cosmic currency of Buddhism. It's something we gather to benefit ourselves, and it's something we can transfer to benefit others. It's literally the stuff the world is made of. Learning about merit can strengthen our desire to gather and dedicate it. The Indian master Nag Arjuna said, "By generating the thought of enlightenment for the benefit of all beings, a mass of merit is collected. If this merit took form, it would more than fill the expanse of space." Buddhist scholar Luis Gomez writes, "The power of good deeds can be harnessed, directed, and transformed, so that through good deeds one becomes capable of affecting the life of others and even capable of working wonders. Good deeds can affect changes in reality. Merit can produce wondrous deeds and events." In the Pure Land tradition, the power of merit literally creates world systems. Sukhavati was created by the oceans of merit dedicated by Amitabha in his previous lives. It's also the transfer of this merit from Amitabha's account into our own that helps us enter Sukhavati. According to the Kala Chakra Tantra, it's collective karma. Merit is a form of good karma that transforms into world systems. These worlds then serve to contain the beings who generated that karma and who will now experience its fruits. The cosmology of merit may be difficult to grasp, but the practice of collecting and dedicating it is easily understood. Merit is gathered by performing good deeds. Delivering that merit to others is accomplished by dedicating it properly, which means doing so with conviction and loving motivation. If you just mouth the words, some benefit might trickle. If you really mean it, great benefit pours forth. To transfer merit properly, do a good deed with the person you want to dedicate it to in mind. Perform the deed with them in mind and then dedicate it to them when the deed is done. This can be as simple as saying, I dedicate the merit of this action to all sentient beings, and especially to insert their name. May it bring them benefit and solace. May it guide them into the best possible rebirth. The dying or dead person also gathers merit by being the cause for the helper's motivation to generate the merit. It's particularly helpful to perform dharmic deeds, because dharmic activity is considered the most valuable. Dharma is also the highest form of generosity. You can dedicate your spiritual practice, sponsor translation projects, send money to a dharma center, or sponsor someone in retreat. You can donate to the construction of a spiritual project, like a stupa, monastery, or shedra, monastic college. Vajrayana practitioners can perform or sponsor a feast, sok, in the name of the deceased. A saving of lives practice is especially helpful. This involves rescuing animals that would otherwise die, for example, buying and releasing worms from a bait shop. In Buddhist countries, butter lamps are frequently offered after someone has died, sometimes numbering over 100,000. This is an offering of light, a symbol of wisdom, which is what a bardo being needs on their journey into darkness, confusion. You can give the possessions of the dead person to Goodwill, waiting a few days after they died to do so, contribute it in their name to humanitarian projects like hospice, orphanages, or hospitals. You can give to a charity, volunteer for a worthy cause, plant trees, and pick up trash. The list of beneficial things you can do in their name is endless. The power of merit can also bring solace to those who wonder how a non-Buddhist might fare in the bardo. Any good person automatically accumulates merit and is taken care of by the force of that merit. Proper dedication of merit is important because it multiplies the power of the good deed. Tulku Tondup says, in order to enjoy a peaceful and happy life and rebirths, it is essential to accumulate merits and cultivate positive qualities. Whatever happiness and peace you are enjoying today is the direct result of your meritorious behavior in the past. To further improve your future life, you must continue to make more merits by performing virtuous deeds. Just as you gain physical well-being by providing your body with proper nourishment and exercise, so you must care for your spiritual health by making merits. Dedicating merits multiplies their power exponentially. The greater the scope of dedication, the greater the power. So dedicate merits not just to the deceased, but also to all mother beings, as the cause of their happiness and enlightenment. Then enormous merits will redound to them. Next, make aspirations. This is a way to invest merits for a particular goal and further magnify them. Using your dedicated merits as the seed, make aspirations that all mother beings may enjoy the fruits of happiness and rebirth in the pure land. Beings in the bardo in particular need us to dedicate merits and make aspirations for them. If we repeatedly dedicate whatever merits we and the dead person accumulated, no matter how meager, to that person and all mother beings for their rebirth in the pure land, we can be sure that the merits will cause that result. Giving merit away doesn't work the same way as giving something material away. When you give your merit to all beings, not just to one, the merit doesn't lessen like a material offering might lessen. The merit, ironically, grows. So by dedicating it to all beings, you're not watering the merit down, you're beefing it up. Kenpo Kartar says, if you dedicate the merit to one person around one situation, then the merit will ripen only once and the merit will be exhausted. But if you dedicate the merit to all sentient beings, the merit becomes inexhaustible. Merit can also create affluence and wealth for you, but this karmic ripening happens just once and is exhausted. With the mind of enlightenment, dedicating the merit to all beings, the merit becomes inexhaustible. The merit of an act can be lost if it's not dedicated. If someone gets angry before the dedication, the anger can erase the merit. So you should dedicate the merit of your good actions every time you perform them. It's like hitting the save icon on your computer after you've written something important. Dedicate the merit from your meal or your exercise. Dedicate the merit after you read some dharma or after a day of work. Train yourself to dedicate the good that you do, and you may find yourself doing more good. B. Allen Wallace writes, "Merit can be understood as a spiritual power that manifests in day-to-day experience. When merit or spiritual power is strong, there is little resistance to practicing dharma, and practice itself is empowered." Tibetans explain that people who make rapid progress in dharma, gaining one insight after another, enter practice already having a lot of merit. By the same theory, it is possible to strive diligently and make little progress. Tibetans explain this problem as being due to too little merit. Merit is the fuel that empowers spiritual practice. Just as merit can be accumulated, it can also be dissipated by doing harm. In general, mental afflictions dissipate merit. The mental affliction that is like a black hole sucking up merit, worse than all the others, is anger. The classic way to gather merit is through the practice of the first five paramitas, or perfections, literally crossed over: generosity, discipline, patience, exertion, and meditation. The paramitas are a Buddhist practice that culminates in the sixth paramita, prajna, the perfection of wisdom. Cultivating the four immeasurables, loving-kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, also generates immeasurable merit. In daily activity, we can recite mantras and dedicate that recitation. There are endless liturgies to recite and dedicate, but one of the most powerful is the King of Aspiration Prayers, the Aspiration for Noble Excellent Conduct, by Samantabhadra. According to Kenpo Sultrim Gyamso Rinpoche, this is an especially powerful liturgy to recite for people who have committed suicide. Rinpoche says that this prayer should be recited 1,000 times by loved ones and dedicated to the one who committed suicide. Because gathering merit is so simple, and because it's not material, we don't believe in its power. How can it be so easy to help others, especially the dead? But the power of merit is fathomless. The esoteric practices, discussed shortly, aren't necessarily more effective than gathering and dedicating merit. Indeed, one of the reasons to do the following practices is to gather, magnify, and direct the merit to the dead. If you don't connect to the following rituals, then relying on the power of merit alone will suffice. We saw how powerful mindfulness is in preparing for the bardos. Merit has a similar potency. Along with equanimity, the baseline instruction for the bardos is mindfulness and merit. These practices alone can carry you and others through the bardos. Aspiration prayers are connected to the dedication of merit. Aspirations are forward prayers that invest and amplify merit toward a specific goal. Dedication and aspiration are like lasers. They concentrate a diffuse beam of light into a powerful ray that can cut through anything and therefore reach anybody, anywhere. The biggest challenge for skeptical Westerners is believing it. Dodrup Chen Rinpoche talks about how aspirations have real force at the time of death. Buddha Shakyamuni told many stories to illustrate why someone had become his disciple, or why someone in particular had become one of his gifted disciples. In many instances, the main cause he gave was that these people had made virtuous aspirations while they were dying. So, what wishes you make at the time of death will have a great impact on your rebirth. Tonglen is very helpful after someone has died. On the in-breath, absorb the dead person's confusion through every pore of your body. On the out-breath, send out light and love from the center of your boundless heart. Imagine that by doing so, you are clearing their mind and illuminating their path through the darkness of death. Reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead. As I described the practices you can do to help, choose those that you, or the dead person, connect with the most. Your belief and heart connection are what matters. Reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead aloud for the dead person is the first of our esoteric practices. In addition to the guidance provided by the book, reading it generates great merit and blessing through the force of the words themselves. These are the sacred words of the Tantric Buddha, Padmasambhava. The inner reason to read the Tibetan Book of the Dead is that it stabilizes the mind of the reader. This stability provides a sense of ground for the dead person, which is what they desperately seek. By reading the book, or any sacred liturgy, the mind of the dying person is magnetized to the steady mind of the reader, and takes refuge in that stability. Some teachers say that the book is so powerful that it should even be read to those who are not Buddhist. Most teachers, however, say that this is inappropriate. As a Buddhist, how would you feel if a well-intentioned Christian started to read the Bible at your bedside, or a good Muslim started reading the Quran? Always check your motivation. Trungpa Rinpoche said that reading the book aloud is probably not helpful unless you understand the text and can relay it in your own words. But if the dying person was familiar with the Tibetan Book of the Dead and requested that it be read, or if a teacher makes the suggestion, then we should honor that instruction. You can start reading the book when the dying person stops breathing. Read it slowly and clearly. Some teachers recommend reading it loudly. Since we don't know where the person is in their journey, the instruction is to read it continuously for 49 days. You can buy a recording of the book and play it constantly, or read it on the 7th, 14th, and 21st days after the death. The bardo being is easily guided but easily forgets, and our job is to remind them. It takes about 3 hours to read the book. If possible, it's good to read it at the place where death occurred. The book itself says, "This teaching does not need any practice. It is a profound instruction that liberates just by being seen or heard or read. Even if the Buddhas of the past, present, and future were to search, they would not find a better teaching than this." Sur Offering. The bardo being is called a Gandharva, or scent eater. Gandharvas live off the smell of food, but only if it is dedicated in their name. Without this sustenance, they feel hunger just like us. The traditional way to feed the Gandharvas is with the sur, or burnt, offering. Due to habit, your loved one may continue to visit during family meals and wonder why there's no place setting for them. This is a good time to do the sur offering. Tenzin Wangyal Rinpoche recommends doing it every day for 49 days. The sur is blessed with your meditation and motivation and then burned. You can play a small set of hand cymbals, called tingsha, to call the Gandharvas. There's a classical recipe for sur, but you can also burn cookies or chips on small charcoal briquettes. Don't use meat or foods that cause an unpleasant smell. Small pieces of new fabric or brocade can be included. Tulku Tondop says, "In sur ceremonies, with the intensity of heartfelt compassion, the power of meditation, and the force of mantras, we purify all the impurities of the sur materials, magnify the materials into enormous amounts filling the earth, and transform them into wish-fulfilling materials that the dead will enjoy and benefit from. Thus, the smoke will not only appear to the dead as food and drink, but also assume the form of whatever they wish for and need. Even if the performers cannot follow the meditations in detail, if they have devotion to the Buddhas, bless the sur with prayers, and dedicate it to the deceased with pure love, then the sur offering will become a source of satisfaction and benefits." Commissioning monasteries. One of the most effective ways to help the dead is to commission a retreat center or monastery to perform rituals for them. This benefits you, you gain merit from making the request and paying for it, the monastery, the monks or nuns gain merit by doing the ritual and also make income for the monastery, and especially the dead person, who benefits from the vast accumulation of merit dedicated on their behalf. There are a number of complex rituals, some of which I will describe later, that are beyond the capabilities of the average Westerner. Having ritual masters, monks, and nuns perform these practices is more realistic than gathering all the materials, getting the necessary empowerments, and learning the intricate procedures. Bardo beings need our help now. Contact the monastery. Tell them what you want or ask for their advice. Then make a donation. Most monasteries have a set charge for standard practices, but there may be room for negotiation. For example, Trangu Rinpoche's monastery in Kathmandu does Chitro and Amitabh practices and offers hundreds of butter lamps for around $100. When I have been fortunate enough to have a Rinpoche do Powa for my loved one, I have sent $500. If a fee isn't set, offer what feels right. They want to help more than they want to make money. And remember, the money is used to support the Dharma. Make inquiries in advance so that when the person dies, you can take immediate action. Don't be disappointed if you can't get a master to do Powa for your loved one. Unless you have a connection to a Lama or contact them in advance, Powa is often not available. In India and Nepal, most of the monasteries associated with teachers that visit the West are available to help. If you study with such a teacher, get the information for their post-death services now. I have asked a number of these monasteries, and they all confirm that this is beneficial to them, to the dead person, and to you. It's part of their job, and we should take advantage of it. On a personal note, the solace I have gained from having monasteries, my community, and my teachers doing practices for my loved ones has been immeasurable. Because I set it up in advance, it took minimal effort to start the rituals after my loved ones died. Monastic rituals and ceremonies for the dead. On one hand, Tibetan Buddhism is practical, sensible, and down-to-earth. It's simply about waking up and helping others. On the other hand, Tibetan Buddhism can seem wildly esoteric, shamanistic, even superstitious. This is particularly true when it comes to the bardos. Buddhism is supernatural in both senses, very natural and fully of this world, yet sometimes totally out of this world. Some of the practices mentioned shortly stretch the mind, but they are part of the tradition and are widely practiced in Asia. The following is a sample of how much Buddhism has to offer in terms of helping the dead. The world is a mysterious place, full of magic and wonder, and the wilderness of the dead is the ultimate mystery. The Tibetans have explored this terrain for centuries, offering a legacy of practices that can penetrate into the bardos and benefit those wandering in its bewildering landscape. The list of meditations and rituals designed to help the dead is vast. A few of the standard practices are discussed next. If our faith is strong, and we trust the monasteries doing the rituals, we can leave it to them. But it helps to have an idea of what these practices are, and what they accomplish for our loved one. If you don't connect to these practices, skip to the summary comments at the end of this chapter. The Iron Hook of Compassion is an advanced Powa practice that is performed by a Lama for someone who has died. Most 3-year retreatants have also had this training. This may not be easy to commission because a capable Lama isn't always available. It's best to do Powa immediately after death or as soon as possible thereafter. For someone who is not highly accomplished, it's also best to do Powa at the bedside of the one who just died. For a master, distance doesn't matter. The longer someone spends in the bardo, the harder it is to find them. If someone is approaching death and you have access to a Lama who does Powa, contact the Lama in advance to let him or her know death is imminent. The meditative power of a master can locate the bardo being, hook their consciousness, and send it to a pure land. Compassion is the essential ingredient in this practice. Even if signs don't occur, it doesn't mean the Powa was unsuccessful. You don't have to be highly realized to benefit another person with Powa. You simply have to do it at the right time and with the right attitude. Because the power of any practice is magnified in a group, it's helpful to have several people doing Powa for someone who has just died. Powa is the esoteric practice most frequently mentioned for the dead. This is because the best thing that most people can do in the bardo is transfer to a pure land, either through their own power or with our help. Chagdut Tulku quotes his teacher, Lama Atse, on the importance of Powa for the deceased, but his words apply to any post-death meditation. Think of the dead person. Remember that he has lost everything he held dear, including his own body, that he is being blown about helplessly with no place to sit, no food to eat, and no one to rely on but you to release him from the turbulence of the bardo or the possibility of a difficult rebirth. Think about the relatives who have lost their loved one. What they can do is very limited. Their hope is in you. Meditate from the depth of your love and compassion, and concentrate on the accomplishment of transference. Otherwise, you will fail the dead, you will fail the living, and you will fail yourself by breaking your commitment to them. Another common practice to benefit the dead is dur. Some lamas say that in order to make the other practices more effective, dur needs to be done first. The reason for performing dur is that if someone dies before age 70 or so, it can be due to the negative influence of unseen malevolent beings, called maras. The Tibetans describe entire classes of malicious beings that can adversely affect us, shortening our lives. In Tibetan lore, the mara that contributed to the death can linger around the dead person's consciousness, obstructing their journey through the bardo. The dur ritual is designed to remove the mara, clearing the way for other beneficial practices. Tulku Urgen says, "The dur pertains to certain classes of spirits connected to each and every person's corporeal existence. In the main part of the ritual, the presiding master disengages 9 devouring spirits from the vital energy of the deceased. The understanding is that unless these 9 spirits are disconnected when a person dies, they can slow down or create obstacles to liberation in the bardo. The dur rituals have both a peaceful and a subjugating aspect. Sometimes they involve ritual name burning, a pacifying activity that summons the deceased's consciousness, purifies it, and sends it to a Buddha field. The subjugating aspect exorcises evil influences that may have taken possession of the deceased. These devouring spirits are demon ghosts, a type of sentient being. You hear a lot of hung and put during the part of the ritual where the 9 spirits are being chased from their various hiding places. This ceremony is necessary even for a great being, because such a master's splendor attracts many mundane spirits. Once the obstacles are cleared, then the following practices are more effective. Sukhavati is a common ritual usually performed 3 days after death, or after the onset of rigor mortis. This allows time for consciousness to exit the body. The practice comes in various forms, but the idea is the same. Let the dead person go, direct them into Sukhavati, and supplicate Amitabha for help. This practice is done regularly at many Western meditation centers. The following practices can be done by yourself, if you have received the empowerments and trainings. If you haven't, then others can do them for you. Sogyal Rinpoche describes the practices of Nedren, liberation from the 6 realms, literally leading to places, and Changchok, effigy ritual. Hand in hand with the reading of the Tibetan Book of the Dead goes the practice of Nedren, the ritual for guiding the dead, or Changchok, the ritual purification, in which a master will guide the consciousness of the dead person to a better rebirth. Ideally, the Nedren or Changchok should be done immediately after death, or at least within 49 days. If the corpse is not present, the consciousness of the deceased is summoned into an effigy or card bearing their likeness and name, or even a photograph, called a tsenjang. The Nedren or Changchok derive their power from the fact that during the period immediately after death, the dead person will have a strong feeling of possessing the body of its recent life. Through the power of the master's meditation, the consciousness of the dead person, roaming aimlessly in the bardo, is called into the tsenjang, which represents the dead person's identity. The consciousness is then purified. The karmic seed of the 6 realms are cleansed. A teaching is given just as in life, and the dead person is introduced to the nature of the mind. Finally, the poa is effected, and the dead person's consciousness is directed toward one of the Buddha realms. Then the tsenjang, representing the individual's old, now discarded identity, is burned, and their karma is purified. Nedren can also be performed as a person is dying. Either way, this practice purifies the negative seeds of the dying person that would otherwise lead them to a lower realm. It also accumulates positive seeds, which can send them into higher realms. Nedren brings the blessings of the Buddhas, which can deliver the bardo being into the pure lands, or to complete enlightenment. Another practice is to have some of the remains of the deceased, ashes, hair, nails, blessed, and then put into little statues called tsatsa. These are Buddha images made of clay or plaster. Tsatsa can be kept in your home, and offerings can be made to them in order to gather and send merit. His Holiness Khyentse Rinpoche said that the best purification practice for the dead is the purification of the six realms. This practice cleanses the body of six principal negative emotions: passion, aggression, ignorance, jealousy, pride, and greed, and therefore blocks the door to rebirth in their respective realms. This practice works directly with the root of rebirth. It can be done during life for ourselves, but here it is used to help those who have died. Sogyal Rinpoche says, "According to the Dzogchen Tantras, the negative emotions accumulate in the psychophysical system of subtle channels, inner air, and energy, sa, lung, and tigle, and gather at particular energy centers in the body. So the seed of the hell realm and its cause, anger, are located at the soles of the feet. The hungry ghost realm and its cause, avarice, rest at the base of the trunk. The animal realm and its cause, ignorance, rest at the navel. The human realm and its cause, doubt, rest at the heart. The demigod realm and its cause, jealousy, rest at the throat. And the god realm and its cause, pride, rest at the crown of the head." In this practice, when each realm and its negative emotion is purified, the practitioner imagines that all the karma created by that particular emotion is now exhausted, and that specific part of his body associated with the karma of a particular emotion dissolves entirely into light. So when you do this practice for a dead person, imagine with all your heart and mind that, at the end of this practice, all their karma is purified, and their body and entire being dissolve into radiant light. Sogyal Rinpoche adds this caveat: "Traditional practices such as this require training and cannot be followed simply from this book, the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying." The Shitro practice, discussed in Chapter 1, is also used to help others. After doing the visualizations mentioned in Chapter 1, imagine that the deities radiate light to the dead person, purifying their negative karma. Then recite the 100-syllable mantra of Vajrasattva, who is the central deity of Shitro Mandala. This is a mantra of purification and healing. For those with a connection to female Buddhas, there is a red Tare meditation for the dead. Those familiar with Tare can invoke her blessing by calling her name while they're in the bardo. Her blessing then directs their consciousness into her pure land or into an auspicious rebirth. Again, it's best if the dead person did this practice during life so that the habit arises automatically in the bardo. Chagdud Kadro says, "Visualizing either Tare in the space in front of us or ourselves transformed into the wisdom body of Tare, we meditate that rainbow light shines from Tare's heart throughout the six realms and the bardo and envelops the deceased wherever they are, purifying their karma and infusing them with Tare's radiant blessing. The more profound our realization of emptiness, the deeper is our experience that this is actually the case, not merely imagined light washing over imagined figures of the deceased, but mind's unobstructed quality of sheer clarity encompassing the mind streams of the deceased, purifying and blessing them, bringing forth their natural radiance, which dissolves into Tare's enlightened expanse." The English version of a red Tare practice written by Eichi Chagdud Tulku Rinpoche contains this red Tare meditation for the dead. Finally, Sogyal Rinpoche also offers practices that we can do at the cremation to benefit the dead. The crematorium, or funeral pyre, is visualized as the mandala of Vajrasattva, or the 100 peaceful and wrathful deities, and the deities are strongly visualized and their presence is invoked. The dead person's corpse is seen as actually representing all his or her negative karma and obscurations. As the corpse burns, these are consumed by the deities as a great feast and transmuted and transformed by them into their wisdom nature. Rays of light are imagined streaming out from the deities. The corpse is visualized dissolving completely into light, as all the impurities of the dead person are purified in the blazing flames of wisdom. As you visualize this, you can recite the 100-syllable or 6-syllable mantra of Vajrasattva. The ashes of the body and the tsenjang can then be mixed with clay to make little images called tsatsa. These are blessed and dedicated on behalf of the dead person, so creating auspicious conditions for a future good rebirth. Gelugpa rituals. For those with a connection to the Gelugpa tradition, Lama Zopa Rinpoche provides this list of practices to help someone who has died. Perform Medicine Buddha Puja, literally, honor, worship. Recite the 8 prayers that are normally done in monasteries when someone passes away. Confession of downfalls to the 35 Buddhas, general confession, king of prayers, a daily prayer to Maitreya, the dedication chapter from the Bodhicharyavatara, a prayer for the beginning, middle, and end of practice, prayer to be reborn in the land of bliss, and until Buddhahood. The liturgies for all these practices are included in his book. Perform Vajrasattva Tsog, feast, puja. Make many thousands of light offerings or other extensive offerings. Do Nyungne practice, fasting practice to purify obstacles. Do a weekend of Vajrasattva retreat, Chenresi retreat, or Medicine Buddha retreat. Meditate on Tonglen together with recitations of Om Mani Padme Hum and dedicate for the person who has died. Recite the King of Prayers many times. Recite the Diamond Cutter Sutra. Recite and meditate on the Heart Sutra. Meditate on emptiness, dedicating for the person who died. Perform Dorje Kadro Fire Puja as a group, dedicating for the person who died. Make stupas or tsatsa. The most important thing is to dedicate and say the name of the person who died as you insert the 4 powerful mantras. Doing this can change the circumstances of a person who is going to be reborn in the lower realms, benefiting them to have the causes to be reborn in a good rebirth. Make mitrukpa tsatsa. Make tankas or statues and dedicate for the person's good rebirth. Publish Dharma books or sponsor their publication on behalf of the person who died. Recite Sang Che, the prayer of good deeds. Recite the Namgyalma mantra 21 times. Purify the bones, ashes, hair, or nails with a skillful Vajrayana meditation called Jangwa. If the person who died practiced Tantra, then one can do the following. Perform self-initiation and tsog offering of the person's main deity. Do a weekend retreat on the person's main deity. One can also make offerings on the person's behalf as follows. It is very powerful to make offerings to the Sangha on that person's behalf, as well as to make offerings to lay students who have the same guru as the person who died. This collects an inconceivable amount of merit that you can then dedicate for the person who has died. Also, one can make offerings to the person's gurus, or you can make offering to your own guru on that person's behalf. You can make charity or offerings to the center on the person's behalf, as the center is a place where people can meditate on the path, where they can learn dharma, and where they come to purify their minds and collect merit. You can make charity on that person's behalf to sick people, homeless people, to solve other people's difficulties, to various charities, or to poor people. You can also make charity on the person's behalf to animals. Lama Zopa also describes the benefits of making small stupas for the dead. Other Gelugpa rituals and liturgies include the Buddha of Purgation of the Inferior Realms, Sarvavid Vairochana, the Eliminator of the Lord of Death, Vajrabhairava, the Buddha of Compassion, Avalokiteshvara, the Buddha of Purification, Vajrasattva, the Buddha of Infinite Light, Amitabha, and the Protector Practice of Riwo Sangcho. Summary. These practices give us an idea of how much is available to help the dead. Knowing about these rituals also helps if they are mentioned when we contact a retreat center or monastery. While all these practices are wonderful, loved ones may be too numb to do anything but grieve. The last thing we need is the pressure of conducting the perfect post-death rituals. Feeling that we're letting the dead person down only adds further stress. This won't help us or the dead. This is when we rely on Dharma, friends. If some of these practices resonate with you, tell your friends in advance that you would like to do them and ask for their help. If none of these practices speak to you, don't worry. Your love and compassion is what matters. Summary instruction for how to help others after they die. Think of them only with love. Perform good deeds and dedicate the merit to them. Commission monasteries or dharma centers to practice for them.